Marketing is necessary to run any business well. And while sometimes marketing can feel tedious or overwhelming, it doesn't have to be that way. In episode 31, we shared some of our tried and true tips and tricks related to smart habits for marketing online in unexpected ways.
And in addition to this special episode, we've decided that we'd like to show you how we do this ourselves. We hope you can take some of our smart habits and tips, see what's worked for us and how we've gotten results, and implement these into your own business.
That's right. We'll be sharing all of this in a webinar on Friday, January 22nd, 2021. We'll be sharing our tips on building smart habits so you can market your translation or interpreting business in ways you may not have considered before and make marketing feel like less of a chore and more like a natural part of your workday.
We will share how you can think outside the box when it comes to your area of specialization and where you can best reach clients in your field. And we will show you how you can market your business without feeling salesy while using platforms and tools you already have experience with, even some you might never have expected.
Those who sign up will get a recording of the webinar, as well as a quick reference guide with our tips for marketing in unexpected ways and making a consistent habit of it. You can find the link to the webinar details and registration page at bit.ly/smartmarketinghabits.
And as a way to say thank you to our email subscribers, we'll be sharing a discount code with everyone on our email list for this upcoming webinar. So watch your inbox. If you're not on our email list yet, go to smarthabitsfortranslators.com and sign up. And if you are already receiving our emails, remember to use the discount code when you register for the webinar. We really hope to see you on January 22nd, 2021, so we can share our tips and strategies with you.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 34. It's the beginning of the new year, and it's common for people to set new goals around this time, including some that concern their health and lifestyle. You may be thinking of increasing your exercise and movement, fighting stress, or preventing some work-related aches and pains that are typical in our line of work. In episode 6, we shared some of our smart habits related to nutrition and exercise, and we could tell that this topic really resonated with our listeners.
Yes, definitely. We all struggle with staying on track with these goals from time to time. So it's important to remind yourself why movement is so crucial if you have a mostly sedentary lifestyle. So today we invited a special guest who's not only a fellow translator, but is also qualified to share exercise-related advice. We're excited to welcome Eva Stabenow to the podcast. Eva is an ATA-certified English-German translator focusing on translating, writing, and adapting consumer-facing medical and health content. She holds a graduate degree in conference interpreting and has served the American Translators Association in various roles ranging from division administrator to mentor to certification exam grader, and she's a past president of the Southeast chapter of the American Medical Writers Association. If you're an ATA member, you may also know Eva from attending the Mindful Movement sessions during the conference or her presentations on healthy desk habits and movement snacks. Eva was also a guest on the Speaking of Translation podcast in 2019 in the episode entitled Staying Healthy When You Work at a Desk All Day, which we all do. We'll link to that in our show notes. Eva is a comprehensively trained, nationally certified Pilates teacher for fitness, rehabilitation, and neurological conditions. In 2018, she opened Sunroom Pilates, where she teaches group classes and one-on-one sessions to help others move better, feel better, and live better. Since the pandemic, she has offered daily online classes to build not only sustainable health and fitness while having fun, but also to create a sense of community. In addition to fitness-based Pilates classes, Sunroom Pilates offers affordable 30-minute classes in back care, mindful movement, balance, and functional mobility. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are so happy to have you with us today, Eva. Personally, I felt that the pandemic really affected my habit of regular exercise and movement last year. On one hand, it became easier to fit exercise into my schedule and access any classes I wanted to, even in studios that are far away from my home, thanks to online streaming and studios starting to move to virtual classes or online classes. But on the other hand, my daily routine was disrupted. And with the demands of family and work responsibilities and having little kids, I often sacrifice time for self-care. And I'm sure many parents can relate to that. So I'm very excited to hear your advice. And I have a special relationship with Pilates, or special place for Pilates in my heart, because that was my exercise of choice before I had kids. And I've always tried to fit it in since I had kids too. So it's such a pleasure to meet a colleague who is a certified Pilates instructor.
Oh, wonderful. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. I've been doing Pilates for years too, and it's one of the best types of exercise I think probably I've ever tried.
I couldn't agree more, obviously.
All right. So let's jump right in. Can you tell us when and how you started your career and how it has evolved over time?
So I'm assuming you're asking about translation first, because that was my first career.
Right.
I have a master's in conference interpreting, so that was what I planned to do. But of course, life generally has other plans. So I graduated right in the middle of the software localization boom in the mid-90s. And there was so much work to be had that I kind of got sidetracked and went into software localization and did a lot of games and edutainment and also more serious stuff for IBM and places like that. And I did that for a very long time and loved doing it, but I would always thought about, I've been interested in medical topics for a long time. Even as a child, I was really interested in it, and thought about becoming a physical therapist. And so I moved more and more into translating medical content and health-related things, and got certified as a yoga instructor in 2006 and started teaching that. And then, it all weaves together. I was translating all the things that I wanted to do. I did a lot of medical marketing content and, clinical trials, patient-facing things. And I was noticing that I was in constant shoulder pain in spite of all the workouts that I was doing, all the yoga and everything. And I could never get rid of it fully. And I went to neuromuscular therapists and to chiropractors and massage therapists and physical therapists. And finally, one person told me I needed to try corrective Pilates. And I was very reluctant because I thought I knew everything, as you do. and I did, and it saved me. And a while later, this person offered a comprehensive training course. And I just jumped in and decided that the worst case scenario would be that I'd know how to fix myself. And I finished the training. I loved it more and more. And I opened my own little studio. So that's how it kind of wove together. And now I'm doing both, which is really a dream come true.
That's really nice.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, really cool that you could put your two passions together and make it work. So with those two things in your life, and being a translator and being a Pilates teacher, what does a typical workday look like for you?
Obviously, we're in the middle of this pandemic, and it's changed a lot over the last year or so. So let me just kind of give you a bit of a timeline. So at the beginning of the year, I had kind of established the Pilates studio to where I was doing about a third Pilates teaching, mostly in the mornings, and then in the evenings and the afternoons I would do my translation. But I was only doing one-on-one sessions and working with a lot of people in the rehab space who had various issues, because I have a fully equipped studio at the house with all the equipment. And that was what I had planned to do. And I wasn't set up for group classes. I didn't plan to do that. And then with the pandemic, I decided to close that down very quickly, because I believe in science, and I looked at what was happening, and I just decided I wasn't going to do that, especially because I'm working with a few vulnerable populations, so I really didn't want to expose anybody or myself. And then translation took over a little bit. I put a lot of work into trying to pull the Pilates online, which was challenging because you have to teach very differently, especially when you're working with people who may have various issues. And of course, not everybody is prepared to do online sessions, and sessions are not, you know, not inexpensive. So there's a bit of a mental resistance to doing that. And then I decided that I wanted to start to do something for people. So I started doing these free little mini sessions every day, which I've now taken down to 3 times a week, but I'm still doing them just to keep people connected and give them a place to check in. And I don't necessarily do Pilates. I just move a little bit with people and, you know, ask what they want to do. So by now my day looks kind of like this. I get up, I walk, I do all the work on my translation business and do some scheduling for Pilates. I then teach a session or a mini session around midday, teach the better part of the afternoon, and sit in some translation work in between, and often teach evening classes as well. So that looks very different from what it was at the beginning of the year, and I'm sure it's going to look a little bit different probably in another few months, but that's where I am right now.
Yeah, and not knowing what's coming, I mean, I think we've all had to learn to adapt in some way, but that's amazing that you can do your translation work as well as, you know, teaching and fit both in and have a nice balance there of the two.
It helps that it's complementary in the sense that I'm doing two very different things. Mm. So that helps with not getting too exhausted.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I can see that. That's very interesting. Yeah. So Eva, we believe that work-life clarity, and we say that rather than work-life balance, is extremely important for freelance language professionals. What are your thoughts on this? And do you try to protect the boundaries between your work and your personal life?
I completely agree with the work-life clarity. I am not someone who does well with hard structure. Also because of the nature of the work that I do, especially with translation, we all know that things are unpredictable. So I've had to find a way to make it fluid, but still distinct. So what I do is I try to take Saturdays completely off, and I actually get kind of grumpy if anybody tries to talk to me about translation on Saturdays, if I don't have to.
Yeah.
I try to take some of Sunday off, but I've turned that into my day for writing my Pilates newsletter, which I do every week, and doing admin preparing for the week. So I just reserve certain spaces, and that is for me mostly Saturdays and evenings and early mornings. I don't teach early mornings. I don't translate in the early morning. I like to kind of wake up slowly and get my walk in, get a cup of coffee, get some breakfast, and then kind of set myself up for the day. Mm-hmm. So, and then prepping for the week on Sundays is really helpful for me,
right.
Which I realize that doesn't work for everybody, but that seems to have turned out to be the way that works best for me.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I prep on Sunday afternoon or evening, and it's really helpful to start the week that way.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say maybe are some smart habits that have been crucial in your career? Anything that might be related to work or physical and mental health, relationships, any kind of habits that you think have made a positive difference?
I'm trying to crystallize this into just a few. Definitely for me, I don't like to sit still for very long, which is not helpful for translation. So I need to move, and I need to move regularly. So I do with the pandemic, I walk a lot. I run occasionally. I do Pilates. I have learned to schedule in self-care, which used to involve getting a massage once a month, once every 6 weeks, going to the gym regularly, taking classes somewhere. And now I've started taking online private sessions once a week, just for me. And I've picked a teacher that does something different than I do, just so there's not that much overlap. I already said that I walk a lot, that I get outside a lot, I have to get in nature a lot. And we live in a fairly, natural environment. I've taken up gardening. So that really helps me get my head clear.
Yeah.
And just taking time for things that I enjoy. And that's not something that comes naturally to me, especially because it often overlaps with all my interests. And also then just learning, keeping on learning. I'm the kind of person who keeps wanting to learn more about certain things. And So I keep doing courses and, just pushing the ball ahead, and not so much in the sense that I'm pushing myself to excel at these things, but just following where my curiosity leads me,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Actually, there's a lot of research that shows that as you continue to learn new things, you're actually doing yourself a huge favor for your mental health and emotional health. I think that's really a very smart thing to do and continue to do. But I, like you, I have a hard time sitting for very long, which you're right, does not mix well with being a translator. But, I think it's important because we often think, oh, no, if I'm not at my desk, then I'm not being productive, or I'm not working, or I'm not, we get this feeling of guilt, I think, sometimes. And
yes,
it's really, and it's really important to get outside and to move. And those things should not be something to feel guilty about. But somehow we've made them, those nice to haves instead of need to haves. I don't know why that is.
That is so true. And I made that mistake for so many years when I started out. I was definitely one of those people who was chained to their desk the whole time. And it's only over time that I've learned that it's not a nice to have, it's a need to have. And disconnecting from the devices. I've actually gotten a device to disconnect from the devices. I've gotten a smartwatch. I bought that a few years ago just so I can go, I don't know, our garden is pretty far out. I can go out and not feel like I'm missing an important message. I'll get notified if there's something really important. I can decide if I need to go in or can just disregard it for a little bit. So that has definitely been a mental shift that's been really important, because you can't do your best work if you're exhausted. And again, another lesson that I learned the hard way.
Yeah, these are really great tips to keep stress at bay and take care of yourself. And it's been a hard thing to do this year, I think. So let's talk about one of the topics that you're an expert in, making time for healthy movement. We loved the presentations you've given on this topic at the American Translators Association annual conference, as well as the interview you did for the Speaking of Translation podcast. So can you share some of the aches and strains that are common for translators and how to avoid or prevent them?
That's a big, big Pandora's box. But what I see with translators in particular, and of course myself, is there's usually head, neck, and shoulders. So tightness in the neck, tightness in the shoulders. Often that leads to headaches. A lot of low back pain from sitting. A lot of really tight hip flexors. And then, of course, wrists. That's kind of what I generally see. Apart from, eye strain, but that's not really what I do. But getting away from the devices helps with that as well. But that seems to be what I see. What is it that you guys have noticed? I'd actually like to throw that one back at you.
Yeah, right. Well, me, all of the above, everything you just mentioned.
Yeah. I was thinking here, check, yes. Check, check. Definitely.
Yeah. And it's interesting how, well, obviously, you would know, Eva, being an expert in this, but your desk setup really affects it too, as well as obviously how long you're sitting at the desk. And I have, now with the pandemic, I've had to change my office setup. I'm sharing my home office with my husband. And when he's having meetings and I need to concentrate, then I'm using an extra room upstairs that used to be a bedroom, but we now converted it to a second mini office. And the desks and the chairs in those rooms are very different. And I really noticed the difference for me. The better office with a better desk and a better chair, I noticed less pain in all those areas. But the second one, that's kind of a haphazard solution that we threw together, it's really bad for my body. I can tell. So now the debate, mental debate that I'm having with myself is, do we invest money into making the second office better? How long is this going to last, or is it not worth it? So what about you, Madalena?
Oh, man. I think for me, definitely the stiff hip flexors, like lack of flexibility there, and also pain, lower back. And my shoulders, my husband will come up behind me and push my shoulders down while I'm working, because it's very obvious that they keep creeping back up. And it's just something that I don't know. It's so automatic. And I don't really know a good way to avoid doing that. But I'm sure you could tell us many things. But yeah, those are the main ones for sure.
Yeah, those are, and they're so insidious. I actually start out this way without chronic pain. My default is my left shoulder goes up and forward, and then I actually went all the way to thoracic outlet syndrome, which is another one of the things that's not very well known, but a lot of people have. So I had pain all the way into my radiating into my pinky finger, all the way down my arm. I thought I couldn't work anymore. It was really bad. And I noticed after a while that I was doing this when I sleep. I was doing this, it was just so automatic. But the best way to counteract that really is, well, it's not a quick fix, but just build awareness for what you're doing, which is one of the things I keep trying to do in my classes. Just build awareness for what you want your posture to be, and just to go take that whole journey from, let me get this right, unconscious incompetence to unconscious competence. Right, that whole arc. You go from not realizing what you're doing and you're doing it wrong to realizing that you're doing it wrong, to being able to do it right when you are aware of it and when you're thinking about it, to unconsciously doing it right. So it's like a whole trajectory, but takes work. But there are things you can do to help yourself do that. And moving around definitely helps, and moving in a targeted way helps. And there's little fixes and devices, obviously, that help as well.
And another thing I've noticed, I don't know about you too, but if I sit for long periods of time, which I already said is kind of hard for me to do, but if I do, I find pain in the glute muscles as well sometimes, and I'm like, or they're not as strong, I should say, for if I end up doing like a strength exercise one day, like the next day I'll really feel it, and I'm going, wow, those muscles really need to be worked more often.
Well, the sneaky thing is that you get so tight that it not only weakens certain muscles, it also not only makes certain muscles tight, is what I'm trying to say. Sorry, I got that the other way around. It also weakens other muscles because they're not working the way they should, because you're in this faulty position. You're not in alignment that your body wants. So it's sort of a chain reaction, and you just have to work to counteract it, especially since time doesn't work in reverse for any of us.
That's true. So, Eva, do you have any tips you can share with us and our listeners on how to consistently make time for a healthy movement during the day?
I think that the best way to do it is to build it into your schedule and to make it a habit, which of course takes some deliberation. There are plenty of books out there on how to build healthy habits. I'm not going to go into that. But I think if you prep for your week, write it into your calendar and make it non-negotiable. And then just get used to doing it. Like, I do not feel good if I don't get my morning walk or movement in by now, because I'm so used to doing it. So your body will remind you. You can also set yourself triggers. I don't know, 5 squats while you're brushing your teeth in the morning. Or I have one person who has issues with foot drop, so not a lot of control in the feet. And she does her balance exercise while she's waiting for the water for her tea to boil in the morning. So associating the things that you do with a certain point in your day, or a certain time, or even setting an alarm, all that works. You can There's apps that will remind you every hour to get up. I think iWatches do as well. Every once in a while I get one of those, and you can take that as a trigger to do something that works for you, from stretching to going out into the yard and playing with your dog for 5 minutes, to getting on the floor and playing with your kids, or maybe doing some kind of playing some kind of a game. There's all sorts of things that you can do. I think the thing to remember is you have to have something that you're going to enjoy and that you're actually going to do. If I tell you to run a mile and you hate running, that's not going to work. It has to be something that you enjoy, or turn on the radio and put on your favorite music and dance around for 5 minutes. I think making it a habit and doing it regularly, and not having this huge thought of I have to do, I don't know, an hour and a half of CrossFit a day, which hopefully nobody's doing, is, but that's just such a big chunk. And apart from, don't get me started on that, but it's such a huge, overwhelming thing. I think breaking it down into small things and making it just a regular part of your routine is the way to go to make it sustainable.
And I like your tip about making, I think James Clear calls this habit stacking, by tacking it on to something you're already doing. So, like the person who was doing her foot exercises while waiting for her tea to boil and those types of things, it's sort of like a trigger. When this happens, then I do this, new habit or something like that. So
Yeah, I mean, we're all Pavlov's dogs. I think was it dogs? Yes, I think
Yeah,
so.
yeah.
In a way, we have this automatic response once a habit gets ingrained. So.
Yeah, that's so true. I could tell, like pre-pandemic, I used to do a lot of bar at a bar studio, and it was so funny because it was such an automatic, it was like a reflex for me. If I was in the kitchen next to a countertop, I would like grab the countertop and go into first position. Like my body was telling me, like, oh, here's what you do. So now that I do that, and I don't do that anymore, I do bar or Pilates or yoga at home. It's not the same, but I could totally get, you know, what you're saying with, you know, your body, you're teaching your mind and your body a certain routine, certain things you do during the day. And once you stop doing them, you miss them.
That's the thing. And I think one thing, since you just mentioned that, that just made me remember that it's important to schedule it and to have accountability, especially in times of the pandemic. You know, normally people say get a workout buddy or go to classes. Well, we don't have that right now. So I've made it a point to schedule classes for myself that I pay for individually, not as a membership, but then I feel like I have to go because I've spent the money. Even if it's not convenient, even if I have a job, Jim, like I paid for this, I'm going to do this. And then also somebody's waiting for you there going, where is she? You know? So I try to not make it huge classes. I try to make it small classes. And I've noticed that the people that I have in my own streaming classes come to say hello to the people and ask about each other. And then the next time we'll go, hey, where were you? We missed you yesterday. And there is that accountability factor, and it does keep you motivated. And we shouldn't underestimate that we're social animals, and we need that. And or if you're not such a social animal, there's a lot of very introverted people in the translation business. I'm sort of an ambivert. Just having the accountability generally will do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's really helpful. I always thought that I was somebody that didn't need to have some kind of accountability, but it really depends on what it is. There are certain things that an accountability buddy is very helpful for, and other things, you know, you're just more self-motivated to do. I think that's smart to be aware of what your ways of doing things are and just kind of try to accommodate them in a way that will help you succeed.
Yeah, and I think you probably have to try it out a few times and just try a few things and see what works, and you just don't be too frustrated if it doesn't work right away. You know, go make it, may take a take stock after a week or two and go, is this working?
Right. Yeah.
Let me try this. Let me try that and just find out what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Eva, one thing we like to discuss on the podcast is how important it is to make time for proper self-care. And it seems like these days self-care is just such a buzzword, but it truly is important to, you know, for maintaining our overall health. Can you share your thoughts on how to consistently care for ourselves without feeling guilty about what we think we ought to be doing instead? Maybe, you know, work or family stuff?
Well, I think I've already touched upon that a little bit in terms of doing it. But I think that to avoid the guilt, that's really a key thing, because we all have that. And for one thing, it's really important to just remind yourself that you are not going to be able to meet your responsibilities in the way that you would want to and be your best self if you don't take care of yourself. You know, we're not machines.
Right.
We can't keep cranking out stuff. We can't be the best translators, the best parents, the best human beings, the best partners, the best friends if we're not taking care of ourselves. And that, I think, is just so important. And scheduling that in is really really just super important, and not letting it be negotiable. I have so many people my age and a little bit older that I talk to who are friends and acquaintances who don't make time, who always say, well, I should, but they don't. And I can see the toll that it's taking on them, on their bodies. And it's just not, it's not a good place to go. You just need to actually make that time for yourself. You owe it to yourself, because, you know, we all have a finite amount of hours and minutes in this life.
Yes.
And you want to live well and do justice to yourself and to your community, your family, the people that you love. And we just happen to be a little bit creative about it right now, where we can't just schedule a massage and go there because, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. So I'm scheduling, like I said, regular Pilates sessions for myself with a person that teaches me. And I'm making it a point to make those just for myself. And I am not perfect at taking care of myself. But I try to recognize the signals that happen before I get overwhelmed, put in a hard stop before that happens, and regularly reevaluate what went well and didn't go well. And the taking a break for a day, a week, really helps me do that, and not reacting immediately to everything. I think that's also, I'm jumbling a lot of things together here, but it's just these things.
No, but those are excellent tips. Yeah. Like, I really think that the one about recognizing some, you know, signals before you reach the point of being too far, you know, into burnout or something, or you know,
yeah,
not taking care of yourself, what it can lead to. I think that's really a good tip.
Yeah. And that's so hard to come back from if you do go all the way there. So stopping and taking stock, especially right now, is just really important. And also checking in with people and friends. And I think people can tell that with, you know, if you have friends that you can, that you're close to, or family, they will say that. I've made it a point to start talking to my mom almost every day, who lives overseas. And, you know, we'll check in, and I'll go, well, you seem like this today. And she'll go, oh, you seem kind of stressed today. And I try and make it a point to call different friends via video chat once a week at least, and just check in with them and see how they're doing. And I think that, again, not accountability, I don't want to call it accountability, but caring for yourself by caring for others and creating a little bit of a community there, I think is really important.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And so often we push our own needs aside because we want, you know, we feel obligated to take care of others or take care of that next important thing and just do, you know, a little bit more before we take a break. And that can really backfire. And speaking of that, we have a lot of listeners who are also parents or caretakers, you know, grandparents and such. Do you have any tips, maybe specifically for freelancer parents who may struggle to find time for exercise and self-care?
So, full disclosure, I am not a parent, but I can very well imagine what that is like. And I'm so much in awe of everybody who manages to pull this off and be kind and gentle with themselves and their children and get through this well. I mean, you're doing so much hard work. I'm just totally impressed. I think that is really where you have to be conscious of what you're doing and realize that, you know, if you're stressed out and you're providing all this loyalty to your clients and not taking care of yourself, or doing just putting your kids first or your partner first, you're not necessarily doing your children a favor or yourself a favor by doing that, because at some point you're going to be too stressed out. You're going to snap at the kids. You're going to, you know, react in a way that you don't want to. And so it's important to put on the brakes before you get there. So if you can somehow remind yourself of that and maybe check in with other parents, I don't know that you can trade off, you know, child sitting, what I call babysitting services with other parents at the moment. Mm-hmm. But if you can create space just for yourself in some way by maybe, you know, using nap time as a time that you take care of yourself, or finding, you know, having a spot where that's just yours, you know, mom's or dad's space where that's where you don't have your kids around you, just to kind of create some mental and physical space so you can actually tend to your own needs. Oh goodness, there's so much. Just taking a breath before you say yes to another job or react to that urgent need that may not be so urgent on somebody's behalf. Taking a breath before you say yes to another commitment and thinking about, okay, how is this going to make me feel? And then just developing an awareness for what your boundaries are and what your what you can do this week, and just forgiving yourself overall, just realizing you're not superhuman, nobody's superhuman. You can only be a good parent if you are a grounded human being. Making an extra $10 is not going to make you a better parent. And clients can just drop like flies, which I've experienced this year. with two clients just going away very suddenly without any warning, without having anything to do with me. And you are left wondering, well, you know, I prioritized them maybe a little bit too much over my own needs or my family's needs, and just kind of being aware of that. So these are not hard rules to follow, but I think just creating that awareness and figuring out, again, what works for me, where are my boundaries, realizing that we're in a challenging time right now, and going, okay, I may not be able to psychologically handle more today, this week, or I may not be as balanced as I normally am when I can go out and, you know, go to my bar class, or, you know, go for a run with friends, or, you know, go have coffee with a friend or whatever. Just acknowledging that and tending to those needs as best you can, and letting go of perfectionism, I think, maybe is the most important part.
That's there. Excellent advice. It was almost like a mini therapy session for all the real freelancer parents out there. Thank you.
Yeah, it was very good advice for parents. It's honestly, I mean, that's something, you know, it's easy to say too, right? I should invest in myself. I should take care of myself. But it's one thing to say, it's another thing to do consistently. I just think it's something that, like I said, with it being a buzzword, self-care, you know, it's not something to feel guilty about.
No, and if you add as another should, then you're creating more pressure. So, you know, if you just can manage to draw back and realize, okay, well, let me take an analogy to my to what I do when I teach Pilates. I often go, observe what your body's doing, observe where your weight is, don't judge it. So I think taking that and taking it into your life and just observing, oh, I'm more tense after this, or, oh, I'm really stressed out by this, or, I'm acting differently now because, and then why is that? And just kind of creating that awareness without immediately jumping to a conclusion and slapping a label on it and saying, I'm bad because I didn't, you know, do this, or because I didn't take care of myself, or because I didn't exercise, or because I ate that donut, or I think being a little kinder and not so judgmental of yourself is probably helpful.
So we've heard you share about movement snacks before, Eva. Mm-hmm. If you could suggest any three movement snacks that translators should consistently do each day, what would they be?
Oh boy, there's so many. One of my favorites is just doing what's called a roll down in Pilates, and I guess a forward fold in yoga. You're basically just standing tall, and then you just roll down your spine, leading with your head, and get really long and heavy, and you just let your head and your neck hang and your shoulders hang, and just let gravity traction everything out, and then stack all that back up and grow tall and take a deep breath. I think that's my one favorite one that you can fit in any time. So many. I love side bends. So the easiest one you can do, and I'm going to give you these standing because I feel like we sit too much. So I think standing exercises are most helpful. Just sort of standing, feet hip width apart, left hand on by your left hip, right arm by your right ear, and just side bending, lengthening sideways, inhaling as you come back to center, and then going to the right side, sliding your arm down, left arm up, coming to center, just stretching out the sides, lengthening through the ribs. That's a beautiful one. And then I'm also big on rotation. I'm trying to think what rotation exercise is easy to describe in a way that's not confusing. Yeah. Just audio. So maybe just this, if you stand with your arms out in front of you, so arms shoulder height, palms are together, you're looking forward, feet are hip width apart, and you're going to slide your fingertips of the left hand along the inside of the right arm, slide along your collarbones, and then out, and then you're reaching your arms away from each other, looking towards that back hand, growing tall through the crown of the head, and then draw the left hand back, and then do the same thing on the right. So sliding the right fingertips along the left arm, across the collarbones, reaching the right arm back, arms reach away from each other, and then bring it back in. So you're rotating the spine. So since you all know Pilates, you know that it's a big, big thing in Pilates world with all the different styles to move your spine in all directions. If you are what is the famous saying? If your spine is inflexibly stiff at 30, you're old. If your spine is flexible the word's not flexible that he uses. If your spine is mobile, that's not the word either. At 60, you're young. So basically, you want to move your spine all directions. And I should know this quote by now. I've used it so often, but of course, it escapes me now. But you get the picture.
Yeah, Joseph Pilati has some good quotes.
He does. He does.
He does have.
And for translators, yeah. I just have to say this: if you read his works, they are, especially for German translators, they're hilarious in a certain way, because he's a German immigrant. So Pilates was invented by a German immigrant, and he is this opinionated old guy from the last century, and the sentences are a mile long, and he's extremely opinionated. And
oh yes, he has very strong opinions. I have read
Did you? My favorite lines. There's actually one passage that says, you know, something about why everybody should be doing what he says, and then he says, "Think about it, you saps." It just.
I haven't read that one. That's good. I can see that though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for a translator, it's really hilarious to read it, and he does have some excellent points. He was way ahead of his time. So.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure, and it's a type of exercise which, this is the part that I love. You can do it pretty much anywhere.
Yes, you don't need a lot of space.
No, or equipment.
Yes.
Yeah. So Eva, this has been really wonderful, and you've given us so many great tips. So thank you for joining us today. And at the end of the interview, of each interview that we have with our guests, we like to ask them about something like their favorite books, tools, or resources. And we're calling this segment our guests' favorites. So Eva, what would you like to share with our listeners that is a favorite of yours? And you can share more than one thing if you like.
Okay, that's good, because I have a hard time narrowing it down. Obviously, I have a lot of Pilates equipment that I love. Let's start with a book. I have this book that my husband gave me for my birthday this year. It's called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art by James Nestor, which is super fascinating and will give you a whole new appreciation for everything from dentistry to breathing. I think it's really relevant with the whole pandemic going on. He's a journalist, a science journalist, I believe, and he ties it in with, you know, how good breathing, which by the way, it's also a big thing in Pilates, is basically the essence of life, and how all the dental stuff that we're doing to our mouths is inhibiting our breathing, and how he goes in and, you know, gives you all these techniques that you can do. And there's some very interesting self-experiments that I wouldn't recommend, but it's just a fascinating book, and you will not breathe the same after reading this book. I promise. It's a really fascinating, fun read. Okay. It's a quick read. So I love that one. And then to relieve back and neck pain, if you're not actually, you know, doing a class or doing movements, I have two favorite tools, sort of at either end of the budget range. My favorite cheapo thing is called an overball. It's basically a slightly deflated, about 9-inch ball. You can use a half deflated soccer ball or, you know, volleyball or something as well. And if you just put that under your head and lay down on it and have it support your neck and just move your head around a little bit, that really relieves neck and shoulder tension very, very quickly. There's a whole host of exercises you can do on it. It's like costs like $9 or something. Or you can find any ball really. And then at the other end of the expense spectrum, we've got something that's been very, very well marketed. So I'm hesitant to recommend it, but it really is kind of a cool thing. These chirp wheels that are all over the place. I took a course on neurological conditions the other day, and it's been a little while, and she was recommending it. And it's just this narrow little wheel that you can, I think you get three depending on which package you get. And it has a little groove for your spine, and you can just roll up and down it. It is really good for relieving tension in your back, and then you can use the little one as sort of posture corrector. So you can put it under your lumbar spine, low back, and it'll make you sit up tall. I think the big package even comes with this thing you can strap around your shoulders to remind you to sit up tall. So I haven't used that one yet, but my husband uses it more than I do, actually, because mm-hmm. I feel like I get a lot of that stuff from all the Pilates that I do. But he loves it, and it's a very, you know, if you don't have the time or the energy or anything to dive into that, and just want something that will help you kind of relieve tension very quickly, that is a really cool thing to do. And I'm going to stop there because I have a million things that I think would be useful. But
Yeah, no, those are great. We'll ask you for the links for those. We can share those in the show notes so people can
Yeah,
find that.
absolutely. This is so much fun. Thank you so much. I love talking about this and sharing this with other people because I've been through the whole ringer with translator pain, I'm going to call it, and being stressed out. And I just love being able to contribute to making other people's lives better with this. I mean, that's just really my newfound mission. So thank you for letting me share about that a little bit.
Thank you. We really enjoyed talking with you today, and it's been really helpful and inspiring to hear your perspective. And I'm sure that your tips will help both us and our listeners to be more mindful of movement and implementing movement snacks into our daily schedule. And before we go, where can our colleagues learn more about you or find you online?
I am on social media, although not very much on the more modern ones. I'm mostly on Facebook, at sunroompilates.com or under my name, Eva Stabenow. And you can also find me at sunroompilates.com, which is, like the sunroom, and then PILATES.com, or wordplay-translations.com. And that has all the email addresses and the contact info. So I would love to hear from anybody, and if anybody has any questions, I'm also always happy to help with advice or suggestions or, anything I can be of help with.
Perfect. Thanks. We'll add those links to our show notes. And to our listeners, Eva is kindly offering a downloadable PDF with some sample exercises and a code for a free online class with her. Our email subscribers will receive them next week. And if you're not receiving your emails yet, you can sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com.
Yes, thanks again for joining us today, Eva. I am definitely going to take that free online class myself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, I can't wait to see you again. And thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I love your podcast. And I actually don't think I'm subscribed to the newsletter, but I'm going to go do that right now.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode. If you liked it, there are a couple of simple ways you can show your support. Please share it with your colleagues and friends and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This only takes a minute, and we've recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it.
Talk to you soon. We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.